welcome to another podcast edition of the White Collar Crimes Podcast. I am Ryan Horn, the host. So glad to have you aboard as always. I don't know, but I would dare say probably many of you, good chunk of you listening to this, no matter where you are in the world, have probably eaten at a McDonald's at some point in time recently. In fact, at the end of the movie The Founder, starring Michael Keaton as Ray Kroc, the guy that started the McDonald's franchise, it says that it's estimated about 1% of the world each day consumes McDonald's. They pretty much feed the world, by far the most popular restaurant chain in the world. And something else they did is popular. Those of you that are Gen Xers and boomers and the older age group that's could be listening here, you probably remember the popularity of the McDonald's Monopoly game that they launched in about 95 or in the mid-90s, in that range there. Wildly popular, and a lot of people participated, a lot of big prizes, generated a lot of excitement. And you're probably thinking, well, this is a white-collar crime podcast. What would McDonald's and a Monopoly game have to do with white-collar crime? Well, believe it or not, these two did end up kind of colliding and becoming part of a pretty decent-sized white-collar crime case. Again, McDonald's and Monopoly are not two things you would think would be something that would somehow get tripped up into something like this, because they're both big-time American icons and institutions. McDonald's, again, wildly popular throughout the world, and Monopoly is probably one of the most popular board games of all time. They're both just American icons. And somehow, yet, they got involved in a white-collar crime case. As I said, it was quite popular when it launched in the mid-90s. And it got so popular that it would end up with a former police officer from Georgia deciding to cash in on this. And you're probably asking, how does a former cop from Georgia get involved in a McDonald's Monopoly game scandal? Well, we will tell you all about that in here, and we're proud that we can tell you about all this because this podcast is being brought to you by The Weekend Angler. Check out his YouTube channel, The Weekend Angler. All kinds of cool fishing advice and tips, and we're proud to have him aboard as a sponsor. And we're able to tell you that this former cop would end up getting involved in a major white-collar crime case. And this gentleman's name was Jerome Jacobson. He was, as I said, a former cop who became the head of security for Simon Marketing. And this was the group, the firm that was hired to oversee the McDonald's Monopoly game. Now, I didn't participate in this back in the day, so I don't remember all of how the rules and regulations pertaining to this game were, but I know people were always searching for a new piece and some type of thing to complete what they were wanting to do on the Monopoly board, and that piece could be worth a lot of money. It just reminds me of, in a way, I remember when I was a very young kid, probably late 70s, very early 80s, Pepsi had what they called the Pepsi Challenge, and at the bottom of the bottle cap that you peeled off, or that you capped off on the glass bottles, this is back when we were drinking Pepsi out of glass bottles, and you got the letter and it had to spell out challenge. Well, everybody under the sun could find all of the letters except for the A. And, you know, there was a big conspiracy at the time that they didn't make A's because that would complete the word challenge. And then you would have, I forgot what the prizes were at the time, but you could get, you know, a lot of money. And I never really got into this game. I do remember when it happened. I was probably in college around that time when it launched, and then beginning my work at the sheriff's office a few years later after this, because this went on for quite a while, as you'll see in this podcast. And for a while, it illegally made a lot of people rich. So, as the head of security, Jerome Jacobson, he was in charge of delivering the highest value and the rarest game pieces that McDonald's was sending to their packaging plants. Again, this is kind of like the A in the Pepsi Challenge. Very rare, not a lot of them out there, but if you do have one, this could make you a lot of money. And he was making decent money, speaking of that, at the time. I think I read he was making about $70,000 a year, which in 1995 is not too bad of money, folks. I would say now that it would probably be, like making $140,000 now or something. So pretty good money at the time. And I don't know how long he was a cop. Might have had a decent pension to go along with that, but pretty good gig, I would think. And like I said, they were placed in charge of getting the rarest forms of pieces to the McDonald's packaging plants. Now, the temptation, though, must have been too much for Jacobson, because he began pocketing some of these pieces and selling them to his friends. Again, entrusted with pretty high value property here. And along the way to the packaging plant, I guess somehow some of them just went missing. I'm not sure how he reported this, but as it was found out later, as I mentioned, he was selling these to friends, keeping a little pocket money for himself, and his friends were able to cash in, and I'm sure he could have possibly gotten his cut when they cashed in. But the temptation, as I said, got to be much, and he began keeping these pieces to sell to friends, and supposedly did sell a $10,000 piece to a friend for $2,000. And again, once that piece cashed in for his buddy there, I'm not sure if he got his quote-unquote commission off that, but nonetheless was making $2,000 off something that literally he did not have to put any time in to earn. They just turned this piece over him to deliver, and it never made it. He just ended up selling it for a profit. Or not for a profit, but for $2,000 quick, easy dollars for him. And it was also believed that he sold a $200,000 piece for $45,000. Kind of reminds me, he had a pretty good little enterprise going here. Kind of reminds me of that scene in the movie Roadhouse. Again, those of you that are Gen Xers or above certainly remember that one, the Patrick Swayze, Sam Elliott movie. And he's hired to clean up this bar, this rowdy bar. He's a world famous cooler, as they call it, which is the head bouncer. Sees a little scheme this guy's got going with whiskey and skimming tills off the drafts, as he says to him, and keeping a lot of money, and tells the bar owner, nice little enterprise you got there. That's what he says to the bartender. And you know, he's probably costing you about 150 bucks a night, which 30 something years ago when Roadhouse was out, that certainly went a little further than it does now. But that's what it kind of reminds me of. He had a pretty good little enterprise going on here. They handed him the pieces to be delivered, and instead he just sold them to friends. And the friends were able to win a game that was difficult for a lot of people, because these pieces, again, were rare. They were not floating around out there everywhere. And they were quite valuable to get your hands on. And when people did, they could make a lot of money. It was a popular game, and McDonald's is popular. And so that was obviously a combination that was most likely going to lead to big success. But McDonald's, and Monopoly for that matter, probably, I guess, Parker Brothers, that's who, my understanding, is always the one, I don't remember if it's Parker Brothers or whichever one that produces the Monopoly game, probably never had any idea that somehow, even though this might make them a lot of money, it would end up being involved in an embarrassing scandal for them too, particularly for McDonald's. Now, over the years, he supposedly branched out with other criminals and began networking with others, branching out on his scam, getting more people involved, helping network it out a little further. And some of these were alleged to have organized crime ties, such as the Colombo crime family. But it would be a lack of attention to detail that may have attributed to his downfall. And again, I have to question, why would a guy that's served as a police officer, gotten a good gig as a security head, making $70,000 a year, which in 1995, when this all started, that's pretty decent money back then. So why would a guy, again, risk that? Well, you have to think just simple naked greed, and unfortunately, probably easy opportunity. You know, when you investigate crime, as a famous saying goes, that you search for the means, mode, and opportunity. And in here, certainly he had a very easy opportunity being entrusted with these pieces that he could just very easily sell to friends and make money. And then those friends can cash those in and make even more money. So it was certainly something that is strange, again, considering he's making decent money. And why would he risk that? Why would he risk going to jail or prison? It just simply is something that's not easy to explain. And speaking of what's not easy to explain. I believe if you will get a chance here in the coming weeks, very soon, in the next week or two most likely, we're going to have on an attorney that listens to this podcast that has defended white-collar crimes. Very much looking forward to having him on and getting some insight on what it's like to defend a white-collar criminal. And you will get a lot of insight from that perspective on why these folks do. I mean, most of the time there can be a lot of motives, but it usually just comes down to just simple greed and carelessness. And like I said a second ago, his lack of attention to detail on his scam may have been what attributed to his downfall, because a lot of winners were coming from the Jacksonville, Florida area, and many of these were people that were friends and connected to him. And again, it was also being discovered at this time that some of these friends may have ties to the powerful Colombo crime family. So, like so many others we've talked about on this podcast, he ended up popping up on the radar of law enforcement. And the Jacksonville FBI office contacted the McDonald's corporate office to advise them of what they believed to be this reported scheme, and what was developing in it, and how it was coming about. And this probably, no doubt, got the attention to McDonald's, because not only does this have the potential to be an embarrassing scandal for them, but it had to be costing them money, because these pieces were being delivered to people who might not have been able to otherwise win at this game. And again, I don't remember all the rules or regulations of it, but getting these final rare winning pieces sold to them for very cheap by this guy who was entrusted with them was no doubt going to cost them money, extra money that they may not have had to have paid out if people were playing by the game honestly. Now, it was reported that one friend of his won $1 million, and this friend claimed he was a resident of New Hampshire, though it was quickly discovered in the investigation that he too was a resident of Jacksonville. So the FBI kind of give an uptick in their wire surveillance, and really up the surveillance of this case overall, because now they're starting to see names, they're starting to see patterns, starting to see ways that people are making money on something they should not be making it. At least if they were doing it honestly, they probably wouldn't be making it like this. So the FBI ends up in their game a little bit, for lack of better words, in hopes of snaring Jacobson and some of his friends. And it did pay off in August 2001, so we're talking about 6 years into this now, because like I said, this launched in about 95 or so, and not too long after this is when he supposedly figured out his little scheme that he was going to do. So immediately this is going to be something that is going to get some headlines and cause a lot of negative publicity for those involved, because that is exactly what did happen in 2001 when the FBI did arrest Jacobson and initially seven of his accomplices. Now, we'll see in a little bit that wasn't all that it involved, but initially something that maybe just started out on his own to make a few bucks on the side ends up getting more and more people involved, as we'll see. And they all wanted their finger in the pie, so to speak, wanted in on the action. And as we'll see in a little bit, it would cost some of them their freedoms. So, further investigations would actually lead to the arrest of more than 50 people involved in this scam. And the FBI estimated that this scam had netted the folks involved, Jacobson and his cronies, all together. And this is not what they may have had cash on hand wise, but it's believed this scandal cost about $24 million. And when you're talking over 20 years ago, that's a lot. Probably would be definitely more than $50 million now, the way the prices of things and inflation have gone up in the past couple of years. No doubt this is not the same figure as it would be now, but it's even more so then. $24 million in 2001. It's a lot of money now, of course, but even more so 20 plus years ago. And this is a scandal that and a scheme that they had going that the FBI and the federal authorities estimated cost somewhere in that range. Now, Jacobson was eventually convicted on fraud and conspiracy charges, leading to him being sentenced to 37 months in prison, so basically 3 years and a month, and ordered to pay $17.5 million in restitution. So that's a lot of money in restitution. Now, doubtful most of these victims involved or anybody that got scammed from this, particularly probably the McDonald's people, who knows if they actually got any of this back. We talk about that a lot on this podcast, that many times many people who are owed restitution in these cases simply do not get it or do not get what is actually ordered. And for whatever strange reasons, a lot of times the courts are not real active, it seems, in getting these folks revoked and violating their parole, because this is usually a condition of their parole when they're released to make this restitution, and many of them don't. And for some reason, not very many of them are actually violated for that. But that's what was ordered here. Again, whole lot of money now and certainly 20 plus years ago. And it was later revealed that Jacobson had anonymously mailed a $1 million piece to the donations department at St. Jude's in Memphis. And I know most of you folks are aware of them. They do a lot of good things. Wife and I, we've donated to them before. It is a children's hospital in Memphis that helps research and treat children that have been diagnosed with various forms of cancer. And they do not charge for their services. Families are put up for free and they're well taken care of. And it's the donors. This is 100% donor driven. It was started by the actor Danny Thomas way back in the day. And this is what he did. Sends them a winning $1 million piece. So it's sent anonymously. They think probably just a good Samaritan out there is doing this. And he later said that he did this in hopes of getting a lenient sentence if he was caught. Kind of, again, a Robin Hood figure. We talked about that on the last podcast with Kobe Alexander, what he was doing after he got caught living in a poor country, donating money, trying to be a Robin Hood. And we don't know, like I said before, if it was his actual money or if it was money that he had scammed off people, but a lot of them do see themselves as Robin Hood type figures. And you'll see that some, I'm sure, when we have the attorney on in the next week or two to discuss that a little bit. That, and I'm curious of asking him if he has defended any that see themselves as a Robin Hood, because some of them do. Many of them, as I'm sure he'll explain too, I've explained to you on here, research and interviews have shown a lot of white-collar criminals simply just do not accept responsibility for what they're doing. They minimize it, they justify it however they can. No different than street criminals. So we will get a chance to hear that, looking very much forward to that. But that's what he did in hopes of getting a lighter sentence. Now, I don't know if it actually worked or not, if the judge took that into consideration. It wasn't really said or reported, but that is supposedly what he did in order to get a more lenient sentence. Now, as I said, this is most likely a PR disaster and embarrassment, more, I guess, word. Not so much a disaster, but certainly an embarrassment for McDonald's. And they immediately cut ties with Simon Marketing. And the bad PR that resulted from this, obviously for Simon Marketing, caused them to have to liquidate the next year. So they never did recover. It would take something much more than this to bring down a behemoth like McDonald's. But a marketing firm, even if they're a big one, and I'm sure these guys were at the time, that was not enough for them to recover for. So Mr. Jacobson was able to, probably without even realizing it at the time, sink a marketing firm and end up putting some people out of work. Honest people that probably weren't involved in this scam or knew anything about it, but nonetheless they suffered. And again, over and over again, we see that in white collar crime. It's the innocent working and middle class folk that often suffer for these crimes. As I said, Jacobson was making good money at the time. He was, I think, roughly in his late 50s when this case resolved. I'm not sure. Not much has been said about his whereabouts after release. Like I said, he did a few years in prison for this. Most likely he would be in his late 70s. Possibly, certainly could still be alive and around. It's not been reported, so I guess you can also take that as that he's not reoffended. I haven't seen anything that he was ever arrested later for any type of scam or scheme like this, so maybe he got out and just lived a quiet life the rest of his life? Not really sure. Again, there's not been much reported. If we find something out, and if it's discussion worthy, we'll certainly do a little follow-up here on this podcast. But nonetheless, this goes to show you how a good idea like this can go wrong if the wrong people get involved. I'm sure for a lot of years, McDonald's was making a lot of money on this and something that was very good for them and good publicity for the Monopoly folks. But in the end, that's not end up what happened. Some simple greed ballooned into getting more than 50 people involved in the criminal justice system, sending one man to prison, and collapsing a marketing firm. So all of that, folks, just from a fast food game. But we're just about ready to wrap it up, folks. Like I said, looking so forward to having a guest on here soon, an attorney that has defended white-collar crimes. So please check in for that. Check us out on our Facebook page, White Collar Crimes. Be sure and follow us on Apple, Spotify, wherever. Give us that good rating. Help spread the word and help us keep this going. Because we are so thankful that you have been a part of this. And thankful, hopefully, some of you have taken our advice here and donated or helped out your local pet shelter. And like I always say, too, we got other cool stuff in the works, too. A YouTube channel and some books in the works. Taking a little bit more time to get that than I'd hoped, but we are very close to getting that going and wrapped up. And we're going to wrap this up, folks. Thank you for tuning in for it. We will see you here next week. Take care. God bless, everybody.